Today we're going to be talking about fintech and regulators and how they can lean in together to protect the retail investor. Joining me here today is Lule DeMisi, who's CEO of eToro. And before we kind of jump into the topic, just wanted to give yourself the opportunity to give a little background as well as talk about eToro and its award-winning platform.
Yeah, it's a little ironic to have that long title and a fintech person who comes from a very innovative company be talking about the topic, but actually I think for the last few years what we've realized is that our model at eToro works. We are regulated in 12 different jurisdictions globally. We are in about 100 countries. The premise of eToro is that we think social is here to stay as a mechanism for retail investors, especially the population we serve, which is around millennials or younger. And so what we did is we essentially said, okay, we're going to work into the regulatory infrastructure, a social trading platform that also has multiple assets. And that also innovates on that with things like copy and other things. And so it has meant working with our local and international regulators to be able to be able to be that innovator. And we have about 100, we're in about 100 countries, 32 million users in our registration of social trading, and about 3 million account holders globally. So it's a fairly big fintech.
Well, great. Thank you for that. So we, you're certainly no stranger to the regulators, regulation, getting your licenses, I believe 46 states, et cetera, globally as well. Is there any like foundational items that you would think or areas that would be beneficial for those that are sort of starting out as fintechs and when they sort of interact with those the regulators that they should be kind of thinking about or considering?
Yeah, it's taken me a while to get this right. So my background is I used to work at Morgan Stanley and then TD Ameritrade, and I've increasingly gone to more and more digital fintech-y companies. And the thing that I, there's a few foundational things that I've learned along the way. One is you need to build an internal team of compliance and legal people that have the ability to think in two directions, who understand the rules really well, but who also think like builders and innovators. And what I have found is if I don't do that, already I've failed right out of the gate. So that's been one thing, is really making sure we've built a foundation of people that have that elasticity to do both. And then the second is to engage regulators early. We won our New York license recently, our BIT license and our money transmitter license, which is a really difficult license to get. And I think we were like the second in like 2 to 3 years to get it. And part of that process has been making sure that we engage them early and we educate them as to the why of what we do. Mm-hmm. You know, what I find is that most regulators are not trying to shut down stuff. What they're trying to understand is the why. And sometimes I think as innovators, we don't do a good job of explaining the why in the way that they're thinking about risk, right? When I'm on a panel talking about the user experience, it's a different why sort of translation than when I'm talking to a regulator, and I'll give you a simple example. So we have a social platform, and one of the biggest fears for our regulators is like, okay, what if you have pump and dump schemes in there? What if you have all these other things? And so they still want to know that there's a why, which is that you're empowering the retail investor, that you're bringing them into a sandbox that's safer than being out there in Reddit land, right? But ultimately, you still have to translate what are you doing, what are your belts and suspenders to still deliver your why in a compelling way. So it's been a really interesting exercise to do that.
So kind of building on sort of the protection of retail investors, you talked about sort of your virtual platform. Are there things that eToro is doing to protect the investor?
Many things. So one thing I believe fundamentally, protection comes in different forms. So one is making sure that you're designing your product in a way that is allowing for practice before people actually implement strategy. So what we did is we deliberately designed our trading platform that is a practice platform to be exactly the same as our regular platform. And the reason is, you know, I call it the sort of Mr. Miyagi model, right? It's like the wax on, wax off before you actually start putting money at risk. In addition to that, we have a lot of education and context that we provide through spokespeople and teachers that allow people to have context now, right? So they're practicing, and then in the moment, they're also listening to people that we have on our bench that inform them things. And then they can also go to our social feed and see what's happening sort of in the ecosystem of thought leadership in the broader population. The second thing we do is for them to be able to have some transparency on our data. So when you trade on eToro's platform, in any given day, you will know what our usership is doing on various things. And that can keep on, we will continue to productize that over time. So I'll know what are the top searched instruments on the eToro platform, what are the top bought instruments, and a variety of different things that show you behavior on the platform. So we think that these are mechanisms that only educate and delight, but in the end, give context, which is one of the most important mechanisms for protection.
Mm-hmm. So when you think about obtaining the licenses, especially the BIT license in particular, did you walk the regulators through the platform? Was there sessions
Absolutely.
That you set up to
do that? But not just walking them through platform. So I think in pictures, and apparently that's very valuable. And so what we did is we not only walked them through the platform, but we would like double click into certain things and then walk them through a schematic that told them sort of the underbelly of what was happening behind what they were seeing. Mm-hmm. So again, you know, as I said, most regulators, they want to help regular people get access to capital, right? To access to investing. But they're not going to do it if they don't know that you have a net there. Right, and so not only did we walk them through what the platform does, but also the you know, what is the service underneath it and the schematic around that? What is the logic and the code underneath that protects that? What is the policy? And making sure that we connected those dots rather than leaving it up to them to connect those dots. I think with New York, we had at least twice a month what I called show and tells with the regulator, educating them on different dimensions of our platform.
So in addition to the workshops, meeting with them frequently, is there anything that you would have done differently in terms of when you kind of look back at the, you're getting the state licenses, et cetera?
Yeah, I think the first thing I used to assume was that, and no disrespect to any of our legal and compliance partners in here, that they had to be the ones that led the story, because I thought those are like people talking to like people. And what I realized actually is that the regulator is looking for the leaders of businesses to actually tell the bigger story. So at the beginning, I was less involved, and in the end, I became more involved. And I think it does two things. One, they're hearing the story from the leader of the whatever division that's asking them, or business that's asking them for permission. But the second is, it gives them a sense that you have skin in the game. And that's important, because they want to know that you have skin in the game to make sure you're protecting those investors.
So innovation is big with the platform in particular, right? It's helping with the education of the retail investor. How important is that to, I'll say, sharing that with the regulators, the transparency? Like, are you sharing any proprietary model information, or are you getting that transparent with the regulators?
Yeah, so, you know, we've also engaged FINRA, for example, because there's a lot of innovations we want to do on our broker-dealer that we're bringing from abroad. And so we do show them what is the rule, the underpinning rules around it. We don't go into the sort of the specifics of the IP, not only because it seems unnecessary, right? But what we do tell them are some of the anatomies of the rules of the game that are there to either be, you know, sort of like a guardrail or a trip switch, if you will, for making sure that things are not risky. So, for example, on our platform, in order to partake in the social media platform that we have inside our walls, you have to be transparent. A user cannot be in the dark. So what that means is, what I found, like everybody else who's understood life in general, transparency heals most things. So ultimately, when you have transparency, you end up having more responsible dialogue. The other thing we have is sort of rules around our social media sort of engagement, where if we see certain words or certain searches triggering too much in one direction or another, we have the ability and the rules and the algos to be able to understand what's going on to make sure that it's not a pumped and up scheme. So those things, we walked them through how that logic worked. So to the extent that it was relevant to creating guardrails, we did. And then again, to the extent that it was relevant to them understanding the why of what we were doing, we did.
Would you say there was any pain points or friction that you had with the regulators that may have come up through that process?
I think this whole process is painful. It's, you know, I remember there was a chief counsel when I was at TD Ameritrade where we were working through something really complex. I said, oh my God, this is hard. And she said to me, Lule, if we wanted to be in the ice cream selling business, we would be. If you want to be in the ice cream selling business, you don't enter fintech. But once you know that that's the case, and the reason why it's hard is twofold, right? One is, you know, ultimately, this is people's money. And so it's supposed to have guardrails, right? And so it's a highly regulated space for that reason. So whether I get frustrated with any one particular regulator or any one particular regulation, I've already priced it into the price of doing business. And I think it's really important to bring regular people access to capital markets. So it's a worthy goal for me to take the pain.
Is there any specific, like when we think of innovation, right, and throughout the conference we've heard that innovation or regulations are not keeping up with innovation, and we're trying to apply laws and regs from the 70s and 80s to these new products and services.
Yeah.
Is there anything that in particular that's sort of a challenge for you guys?
Absolutely. I think that, right, you know, I wished that that regulation was a little bit, it'll always be behind innovation. I mean, that's an unrealistic expectation for it to be ahead. But I do wish that it was a little bit more closer to its pace. Because I do think ultimately, you know, we live in a weird time now, right? Where money's expensive in terms of high interest rates, where we've got all sorts of externalities putting at risk, where small banks and medium banks are at risk, which I think is a real crisis in our society. And so when you look at that, you want to make sure that regulation is there to protect, but also to advance capital formation. And I would love to see more balance on that front.
Great, thank you. And the with regards to, I'll say, the regulators in particular, a lot of them are setting up sandboxes, innovation offices. Was that part of your journey as well in terms of you leaning into the regulator?
Absolutely. With FINRA, when we were engaging them on a few of our innovative ideas around copy, et cetera, that's exactly what happened. We went to those sandboxes. They've done a really good job also, because sometimes you can run at risk if you create a sandbox that's completely divorced from the regular sort of order of business. You set yourself up for success, for failure, both as a regulator and as well as the fintechs. And they did a really good job of creating connective tissue between the sandbox people we were engaging with and the regular sort of, folks who actually regulate our business. And so that was really valuable, because what you had then is people who were, yes, slower, right? That's the nature of regulation. But also people who had a mental framework to think that ultimately, you know, if we don't innovate, that's also a form of crisis in our industry.
In the clients that I serve, they typically will ask for support as it relates to regulatory interaction and coordination. So for some of the larger players in the market, we've set up independent standalone functions for regulatory interaction coordination, exam preparation, and things like that. Is that something that you guys are doing as well as part of the eToro model?
Yeah, not only that, we also do mock process, okay. Like a pretty robust mock ones as well before we launch a product. Again, I think this has become the price of doing business. In some ways, it's a little bit of a tragedy, because I feel like it becomes a higher cost of entry for new ideas. But you know, it is the environment we're in right now, so we do implement those kinds of practices. The key is to also make sure that as you implement them, you don't create an albatross, and that is also a killer of innovation in itself. So not having a million different regulatory offices that you're doing different things, but rather creating those disciplines, but creating levels of ambidextrousness around them. Again, like the way I think FINRA did, where they created a sandbox, but they connected it to the regular sort of everyday regulation. I think that is really important, because if you create sort of pillars, you end up over-bureaucratizing this thing, and then it just doesn't work.
And then what about with regards to just connecting with the regulator on a periodic basis? So is that, you're sharing your data, you're sharing your information. You said during the process you met 2 times a month, right, before the license. What about after you've achieved that?
Same thing. It's a marriage. And again, part of it is that nobody wants to be surprised. We don't want to be surprised. They don't want to be surprised. And so it allows us to be able to have regular dialogue. And you know, it's by the nature of a regulator and a business person is there's a natural tension that's there, and there's nothing wrong with that tension. But that tension doesn't have to be contentious. Some regulators are better at it than others. But I think that, you know, the more we are able to have that healthy sort of respect of what each of us are supposed to do, but still have bridges and tunnels to be able to have healthy dialogue, I think helps us fulfill both our missions.
Great. So when we kind of think through and have building that relationship, we heard from Director Chopra earlier, you know, it's all about building the trust, mm-hmm. Building trust with regulators. And I think it goes both ways. Mm-hmm. In your experience, is it, you know, building trust through the ongoing meetings, sharing and being transparent with your data has all fostered that relationship?
Yeah, and I'd say not just data so much as the, you know, you'd be surprised because data on its own is not as telling as like the context we provide, right? Mm-hmm. So it's the building trust and then also not only sharing, but constantly providing that context. I think when you are out of sync on context is where you have issues because then the partnership gets at risk and everything else. So investing in that regular dialogue to provide context and intent is important.
How about on the regulator side? Is there anything that you think they need to do differently to lean in more with fintechs?
Yeah, you know, I think it's not so much a regulator observation I have as a macro observation. I am worried for our country that we are not leaning more to the premise of capital formation and innovation as we should. I think we are a little off kilter there.
And then we also kind of think about, certainly during the conference, we heard from the California state regulators as well, and they have open door. They have office hours. They're always looking to meet. And I know that state regulators in New York are putting forth a new bill mm-hmm. that came out the other day. So yep. Is that something that you're kind of leaning into as well?
We're always leaning into what they're thinking about and what direction they want to take. And, you know, to me, what I love about that, I actually think that the New York regulations around, especially around crypto, are some of the best in the country. They're very tough. Like, it's not that they're not tough. They don't issue these things every day. But they do, when they create rules around, especially around crypto and their money transmitter programs, what's interesting is they focus on the actual instruments and what is the nature of those things, right? So when you think of a digital asset as an example, you have to take care of AML, bar none. You cannot have a solid AML program. You have to take care of cyber, bar none. You have to take care of capitalization, making sure that you have the right form of levels of capital, right? And to me, that is when innovation thrives, when you look at the instrument you're dealing with and you create the rules that are adaptive to that instrument rather than constantly, you know, round hole, square peg. And I think New York is pretty good at that.
Any other challenges that have come up related to that?
In terms of New York itself or just in general?
Well, probably general, bigger industry.
In New York, not necessarily. As I said, New York has high standard, but they are, you know, they tailor the suit for the instrument. In general, of course, as I said, it's a tough time to be in fintech right now. But at the end of the day, I don't know any other way of innovating other than leaning in, and that's what we're doing.
Got it. Well, I know we only have a couple minutes left. See if we have any questions as well. No?
Those lights are blaring.
They are.
Oh, thank you. There's a couple in here. So how do you build the trust and understanding with regulators around your social platform? Which also kind of correlates with one of them that says, how do you kind of proactively work together with regulators and fintechs instead of only reacting and regulating after customers get burned?
Yeah, we try to inform them in advance, first of all, and regularly. We create rules around like the monitoring and the sort of the construction of how you engage in social that we think is caring for those moral hazards. There's nothing you can do that makes moral hazards go to zero, right? And what I have found with responsible regulators is that they're not expecting you to go to zero. They're expecting you to have the guardrails to either ensure that you are making it manageable or constantly testing and learning to make it better, right? And so we try to make sure that that's something we are doing with regulators, both in terms of our rules and our policies and our oversight to make sure that that's happening.
Well, great. I think we're out of time. Lulay, thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you for being here.